Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening. This is Ron Edwards, and this is the Don and Ron program coming to you on another Wednesday evening here in the Twin Cities of Minneapolis and St. Paul. It has really been a miserable day. It is truly fall. Fierce wind coming out of the northwest, if you will, driving the temperatures down, coming off of the Canadian plains from Saskatchewan and Manitoba and etc. But this is Minnesota, and I well remember almost 20 years ago when we had a Halloween and we had a blizzard. We didn't see green grass again until April of the next year. So be blessed, particularly for those of you that were not around for that legendary, if you will, Halloween snowstorm of some 20 years ago. It is somewhat of a sad occasion here in the state of Minnesota, and we're going to be touching on that on the first half of this one-hour program here from the Twin Cities of Minneapolis and St. Paul. This is your co-host, Ron Edwards. And the second half of the program, we're going to take a look at truth in reporting, if you will, and the continued mystery about how many people of color, not minorities, if you will, but people of color, are actually working on the $1.3 billion Viking Stadium, if you will. And we have some reflections on that we will share with you tonight. But first, we want to send all our condolences to the family of Philip Flip Saunders, 1955 to 2015. Flip, as he was affectionately known by many, many, many individuals in all walks of life, departed this life this past Sunday after a courageous battle with cancer. It took its toll in a rapid manner, if you will. It was first diagnosed officially in June, though there were those in the Timberwolves organization that were aware that something was not quite right. But in the tradition of a Glenn Taylor organization, deference and respect was shown to Flip. And it wasn't until early September that there began to be an indication that something was not going right in a copyrighted story just a week and a half ago. It was reported that there had been complications. And normally in the medical profession, when the term complications are used, it means that there are additional problems that had emerged. In the case of Flip Saunders, it was pneumonia. With his immune system under attack, if you will, with Hodgkin's, and with his strength being snapped, if you will, though Flip was an individual who maintained maximum conditioning. He was 60 years of age, obviously, 1955 to 2015. I think it was still a shock to many in this city and in the basketball fraternity that is both collegiate and professional. And certainly, again, our condolences go out to his wife, Debbie, to his four children, including his son, Ryan, who is a Timberwolves assistant coach. I had the pleasure of first seeing Flip Saunders, Philip Daniel Flip Saunders. That's his mother named him Flip, but his birth name was Philip Daniels Saunders, if you will. And saw him when he arrived at the University of Minnesota from Cleveland, Ohio, in 1973, where he had been all Mr. Basketball, state of Ohio. And that's quite an accomplishment when you talk in terms of the outstanding athletes, and particularly basketball players that come out of the state of Ohio, which has always been a hotbed for football and basketball and outstanding athletes. For 4 years, he was the starting point guard for the Gophers under coaches Bill Musselman and then Jim Dutcher. Back in those days, I and a couple friends of mine had front row seats. We sat right at the at the corner of the basket opposite the Gophers bench there at Williams Arena, the old barn. This was before the remodeling, and so we were able to have close contact. And over the years, and particularly during the time that Flip and his family lived in one of our suburban areas next to a golf course called Hollydale, we would periodically see him out in the backyard. And there were occasions when there were conversations, and then we had the opportunity to meet him under other kinds of circumstances when the University of Minnesota was having some problems in its basketball program. Flip was not involved in any way in that. He was paying his dues in the Continental Basketball League, though he first started out and is actually in their Hall of Fame, Golden Valley Lutheran, a small Lutheran school in Golden Valley, which is a suburb of Minneapolis. He compiled a record of 92-13 in his four seasons at Golden Valley. He put them on the map. He later was an assistant coach for the Gophers from 1981 to 86, and he was at Tulsa, where actually at one point in time the legendary Tubby Smith, now the head coach at Texas Tech, was to be the head coach before he moved on to Arkansas and Kentucky and Minnesota and now Texas Tech. It was said in Monday's edition of the Minneapolis Star Tribune that Flip paid his dues, and he clearly did. If one knows their basketball and knows their sports, most folks do, the Continental League was truly that. It was a league spread out across the entire continent of what is the United States of America, if you will. But he paid his dues. He won two championships in the Continental League. He caught the attention of owner Glenn Taylor. He had been a close friend and associate and playing partner with Kevin McHale, who had come down from Hibbing, Minnesota, to become a star, along with folks such as Michael Thompson, who became a legend in the NBA, as did McHale, and a fabulous shooting guard by the name of Ray Williams. Cookie Holmes and others were members of some outstanding teams under both Musselman and Jim Dutcher. And so Flip enjoyed tours of duty, as we like to say, with the Timberwolves twice, by the way, Detroit and Washington with the Washington Wizards. He, by the way, is the only coach to be a winning coach in the history of the Minnesota Timberwolves, if you will, compiling a record of 427 in wins, 392 in losses. That in itself is an achievement. The Wolves, who were an expansion team way back in the beginning of the 1990 season, if you will, always seemed to have had some problem. But Minnesota fans, as they have been with the Minnesota Lynx, and congratulations to the Lynx, Women's National Basketball Association, Lynx winning their third championship in 5 years. I think that qualifies them as a dynasty. Flip was a strong supporter because, as well as coach of the Timberwolves, he was also the president of basketball operations. And he was a part owner of the Minnesota Timberwolves, part of a very close relationship between he and owner Glenn Taylor, who owns, of course, both the Timberwolves and the Minnesota Lynx. Flip was a player's coach, as we like to say, respected, very much respected by his players, if you will, a man who understood the importance of diversity also. That is an important part of people understanding, and it is certainly an important part of the agenda of this program, because we are here to talk in terms of the African American, if you will, and how we, quote unquote, as African Americans are doing here in the United States of America and the many institutions that we are allowed to have access to. And of course, professional sports is one, if you will. Flip Saunders was a fair man, as we said, a man respected. That's so important in professional sports, because professional athletes, particularly young men, be it basketball, football, baseball, who are basically in their very early 20s, some are in their teens. There have been some youngsters, particularly coming in from in baseball from the Caribbean, 18, 19 years old. And the Timberwolves, just in the last couple of years, have come in with some 19 and 20-year-olds. In fact, their number one draft pick this past year, Mr. Towns, out of the University of Kentucky, 19 years old. Andrew Wiggins, the year before, 19 years old. Mr. Wiggins probably is going to become one of the greatest basketball players to come out of Canada in the history of that great nation, if you will. But these were all young men who began to develop and craft, if you will, under Flip Saunders. And the word always around the league had been that he was a man of his word. He did not have a ruptured locker room, if you will. And one of the greats of the game to attest to that on a continued basis, Kevin Garnett. I can still see Kevin Garnett coming down the floor at Target Center in his first season 19 years ago, if you will. And it was quite clear that Flip Saunders took Kevin Garnett, as later Kevin McHale was to do, but it was Flip Saunders who worked closely with this tremendous young talent who will clearly go into the Basketball Hall of Fame, the NBA, Kevin Garnett, who expressed, I think, heartfelt reflections and sorrow over the loss of not only a coach, but as Kevin Garnett has said, over a man who was a friend, if you will, a man who could be trusted. And again, in professional sports, be it basketball, football, baseball, soccer, whatever, it is a badge of acceptance, if you will, a badge of respect, to have things said about you which indicates that you are a person that can be trusted. You're a man who runs a fair ship, if you will. You are a person who cares about your players and who cares about the community that he or she lives in. In the case of Flip Saunders, he cared very much about the state of Minnesota. In fact, in my column for next week's edition of the Minnesota Spokesman Recorder, as well as on my website, MinneapolisStory.com, through my eyes, I talk in terms that Flip Saunders became an adopted son of Minnesota, if you will, and so Ohio has to forever share him with the state of Minnesota, with the fans in the state of Minnesota, be they basketball or any other particular sport. For his reputation, his legacy was known across the width and breadth of this state, as well as we said earlier, he enjoyed a significant reputation of respect within professional basketball inside of the NBA. And so Flip Saunders will be missed by many. As we said before, we had a chance to first see him as a young man coming here from Cleveland, Ohio, to become the starting point guard for the University of Minnesota's Golden Gophers. We watched him over the years. We watched him for his first tour with the Minnesota Timberwolves, 10 years, and developing the talents of a player such as Kevin Garnett, who we said just a couple of minutes ago will certainly be inducted into the Basketball Hall of Fame. They are not a lot like Saunders, if you will. They are rare, and consequently they are to be treasured. We only pass this way once. That is something that we all need to understand as members of the human race, that we only pass this way once. And we've oftentimes said, as part of our own personal philosophy, that it is a waste of the creation, quote unquote, of your spirit and your soul and your body by the maker, if you will, that you come and you offer and you leave nothing. And there are many people, the Dr. Martin Luther King Jr.'s, Malcolm X and others, Mary McLeod Bethune, our own Nellie Stone Johnson, Cecil Newman, and many, many, many others who have traveled the path of life, if you will, did what they needed to do, left a positive legacy, if you will, and that their presence will always be treasured as a part of, quote unquote, the great hall of history. Well, Flip Saunders has earned that from his fellow players, his fellow coaches, and his fellow Minnesotans, if you will. And so once again, we say to his family, we say to his children, we say to his friends, and etc., we say to Cleveland, Ohio, and the Twin Cities of Minneapolis and St. Paul, we say to the state of Ohio, we say to the state of Minnesota, we say to the National Basketball Association, we say to the University of Minnesota, that this was a man who was deserving of all of the accolades, if you will, and respect that has been provided to him as he has completed the first part of his journey and will always and forever be remembered as a man who brought great respect, not only to himself, but to his family and to his loved ones. And in many regards, that's all that any human being can ask to have, quote unquote, written upon the tablet, if you will, that reflects your life, your journey, your successes, if you will, and all that you have done to create and to cause a great appreciation of who you were and what you did. Flip, continue on your journey. There will never be another Flip Saunders. We also were saddened this morning by the broadcasting report that Minnesota Gopher coach Jerry Keel, for reasons of health, has stepped away as the head football coach at the University of Minnesota. Many are aware and have been aware that Coach Keel was going through some trials and tribulations as it pertains to his health. But he is a tough man out of Kansas, if you will, a man who has shown a significant sense of character and success everywhere that he has been as a head football coach, as an assistant football coach, if you will. Many felt strongly that he had begun to turn around the University of Minnesota football program, irrespective of Norwood Teague and others who were stumbling and bumbling, and of course had lost their job. But Jerry Keel did not lose his job. After consultation with his family and with his doctors, if you will, and then clearly the university, he decided that it was important that he show consideration for those who were closest to him, his family, and then that next tier and that next group, his players, if you will. He had shown himself to be a tremendous recruiter. In the last couple of recruitment classes, we think and feel, will begin to provide a real uplifting for the University of Minnesota's football program. We're not sure who the next coach will be. Of course, the interim coach has been a man that actually last year, when Coach Jerry Keel showed the effects of his medical condition, if you will, that he was more than worthy of the job of taking over for the interim period. How the University of Minnesota will conduct itself in continuing to guarantee and to make sure that this program continues to reach the heights that Jerry Keel had set out for this football program and for its athletes, if you will. Only time will tell. But I think that it would be an extreme disservice, Coach Keel, and the tremendous energy that he has put into this program at the University of Minnesota, and more importantly, the young men who are those individuals that really make a program and an institution look great or look bad, if you will, depending on all the circumstances. Jerry Keel is another one of those persons that worked hard to display and to convey the importance of treating people with dignity and respect. And there has been no indication that there was anything less as it pertains to the University of Minnesota's football program in the, what was it, 5 years, fifth season, if you will, of Coach Keel's tenure here at the University of Minnesota. And so consequently, our reflection, our statement that it would be a disservice to Coach Keel's efforts, to the energy that he displayed, to the commitment to this program. As we said, not only was he a great recruiter, but he was a man who worked very hard to sell the University of Minnesota, first and foremost to the donors, if you will, to the young men who came to this institution to participate in its athletic and educational programs, if you will. He was a man that felt that educational attainment was extremely important, that this was just not some kind of meal being run to run them in, have them make money for the university, and then drop them. All indications are that he worked very hard, that he, Coach Jerry Keel, worked very hard to make sure that these young men, after they had matriculated at the University of Minnesota, had a future to look forward to, because not everybody is going to play professional football, just as not everybody is going to play professional basketball or professional baseball, if you will. And Jerry Keel seemed to be a man who was well-groomed in understanding that there were important pieces of life and society that a person could reach out and could step up the ladder and onto the platform of success. That is very important. Walk up the ladder, step onto the platform of success, if you will. He is also a man similar to Flip Saunders, who believed that every person had a quality that, if properly nurtured, if you will, properly crafted, if you will, would make them not only a better person, a better human being, but would provide to the general society something that we desperately need during these particular times, both in this country and around the world, and that is people who care, people who are about compassion, if you will, people who feel it important to be a part of making a positive, that's important, a positive difference in the life experience of first an individual, the society, the greater society, if you will, and even a nation. And they feel that that is extremely important. That is a severe task, and it is a challenge that is facing all of us in America, and particularly in Black America, that we do not lose our sense of direction, that we do not lose the sense of purpose, because there is a purpose to live a positive life and to do positive things. Those days of, we used to use these terms back in the 1960s, back in my day, if you will, the days of shucking and jiving, BSing, lying, providing false information, giving a false sense of direction, and et cetera, is not the way to go. Our young people deserve better than that. As Elijah Cummings, the representative from South Carolina, from Maryland, said at a hearing involving presidential contender Hillary Clinton, that we are a better place, we are a better nation. He also was saying that the institution known as the Congress of the United States was a better place than what they had been doing. And the kind of crumbling of high expectations of a great institution, the Congress of the United States. Well, and going back to Jerry Keel and Flip Saunders, these were two men who had the same thoughts and attempted to both create, embark upon, and ultimately deliver place for all in their journey of life. And so it is important that in some regards Minnesota has been blessed. The one has passed over to the other side and has left us with their legacy. The other is still with us and hopefully will still give guidance and reflection and leadership vision that will help a society be a little better place for all of us to walk the road of life. And we say this in the most humblest of ways because of the problems that we see going on across this country of ours. We cannot turn away as we move away from Flip Saunders and Jerry Keel and others as we move into that continued staircase of life, if you will, that everywhere we go, if it's not a police officer throwing a young African-American across a schoolroom in Columbia, South Carolina, or if it is a young white citizen being gunned down by a police officer, again, in South Carolina as an outgrowth of what was supposed to be a marijuana sting operation, or if it is the violence of the last couple of months, which continues to shake the very foundation of our nation, and let us not forget those nine black souls gunned down in a church in Charleston, South Carolina, at a place called Mother Emanuel AME, and the other victims of the carnage that has taken place from one coast to the other in this nation of ours, be it in Oregon, if you will, or be it in the Carolinas, if you will, or be it in Florida, or be it in Mississippi or Alabama, or be it in Minnesota or Missouri, Illinois or Wisconsin, and et cetera. It is a warning sign, really, that we are not as stable as we like to think that we are with regards to the future of a nation and a society. And consequently, that brings me to some of the agendas that are continuously in play. And we are moved and driven by this particular portion of the remaining 29 minutes of tonight's program, as again, as I said, my co-host Don Allen had other obligations and et cetera, and is not with us this evening. But I'm here. And as a historian, I have watched for a long time, and in some cases have enjoyed, in some other cases I have not enjoyed some of the things that I have seen with those that parcel out information and sometimes are confused themselves on what the truth is and what is a fabrication and a lie. I've watched very closely over the last 3 years, ever since the governor of the state of Minnesota announced that the people would have a People's Stadium, though it's not called the People's Stadium, it's U.S. Bank, if you will. It's all about profit. It's all about naming rights and et cetera. And it is not the People's Stadium. In fact, more than 80% of the people will not even be able to afford to go to a game at the People's Stadium. I mean, one has to understand that, if you will. But it sounds good. It is all a part of marketing and promotions and et cetera. But I am saddened when the doctrine, if you will, the philosophy of marketing and advancing falsifications and et cetera kind of becomes the order of the day. And we don't seem to have the ability to stand up and say enough's enough and to call for the truth to be enunciated, if you will. And that leads us to opportunity. And we well remember that in the days after the current commissioner of the National Football League came here to Minnesota and threatened that if a new stadium was not built for the Minnesota Vikings and the Wilf family, that this team could very well move. And on these programs and in our columns and television programs, we not only analyzed, if you will, but methodically walked through the circumstances that were taking place that would guarantee that the Viking franchise could very well move from here to Los Angeles. Los Angeles still is a very attractive site, but of course now with agreements being signed and etc., we assume that per the agreements that the Vikings are locked in for at least 30 years, if you will. If they're not, God help a lot of politicians, if you will, investors, financiers, and et cetera. But it is the African-American community and other communities of color that have been played in many respects. And that is unfortunate because we, the sons and daughters of the African, are at the bottom of the totem pole with regards to economic opportunity in this state of ours. And so on Sunday, on a urban contemporary station in a program, we heard a man by the name of Alex Tittle. Mr. Tittle, for the second time in about a year, was on this particular program espousing the same rhetoric that he had espoused about a year prior with regards to the opportunities that would be afforded to African Americans and others of color and quote-unquote minorities to work on the Viking Stadium. And later on, the commissioner of human rights in the state of Minnesota, a man by the name of Kevin Lindsay, who first appeared on the scene back in 2011 with Governor Mark Dayton in the first term of his governorship, if you will, talked in terms of staggering numbers that would be used and utilized under color of law as it pertains to allowing for the accessing by people of color into these lucrative jobs. Now, over the last 5 to 6 years, we've watched tremendous construction and building going on, joining the traditional construction and et cetera that you see annually, the highway, specifically highway construction, building new bridges and et cetera. We are a very bridge safety conscious state, if you will, after the tragedy of a major federal highway falling into the Mississippi River a number of years ago, and so we are extremely sensitive in this state. It's too bad that we aren't as sensitive about opening the doors of opportunity to the sons and daughters of the African, if you will. But it will always be difficult to do that when, in fact, we have so many who, in return for a small handout, I guess, will indicate that things are going well. Now, for those in our domestic and international audience, we had a situation here about a month ago that became extremely embarrassing. And the kind of conversation that really should be taking place is really not taking place, because it would require a honest discussion and reflection about the conditions that are confronting African Americans in the state of Minnesota. That situation was the federal government. You see, you can't always depend on that federal government to play the game. The federal government is so broad in its introspect, if you will, and its own politics that sometimes it goes off in a direction different from the local government, if you will, be it the municipality or be it the state. And so the Bureau of Census, which is actually a constitutional, quote-unquote, entity within the American government, the Census Bureau does a lot of things. And, of course, it works closely with other government entities, particularly those that are involved in monitoring how well or not well, quote-unquote, all segments of the American society are doing. And for whatever reason, the Census Bureau came out with a startling report about 2 months ago in which they said, ooh, something peculiar has happened in a place called Minnesota, and an atmosphere, notice we said atmosphere, not necessarily a reality, an atmosphere of perceived, again, perceived, not confirmed, not certified, economic uplift for all groups, if you will, irrespective of race, creed, and color, but at the same time, respective of race, creed, and color. And the Census Bureau reported that a peculiar, very peculiar and startling thing happened, which normally would take place only in a recession or depression, if you will, and that is the economic bottom for the African-American community in Minnesota had taken a terrible downward turn, if you will, not upward, if you will, didn't spike, if you will, at the top of the chart and et cetera. And that was that the African-American community had, in a period of really about a year, lost 15% of our economic base income, if you will. I mean, that's puts you into a third world, maybe even a fourth world kind of situation. Now, on this program, over the last number of years, myself and my co-host, Mr. Allen, have talked in terms of some of the things that are not, quote-unquote, quite up to par, if you will, that is not specifically working well for the African-Americans, for the sons and daughters of the African. And we come under criticism and attack. And, in fact, I know that in the case of Mr. Tuttle, as an example, he and Mr. Allen are friends and have worked together and socialized and et cetera. And Mr. Allen has not tried to really hide that, if you will. Well, for the last year, we have been asking Mr. Tuttle to join us on this program to talk in detail and with great specificity and certification of that specificity about how well the stadium, the Viking Stadium, is doing in hiring African Americans. In fact, there were a number of articles that have been published and et cetera here in Minnesota. And what one of those articles, or a number of those articles, talks in terms of, you know, how well things are going, how many people are going to be working, if you will. And at one point, there are documents that if anyone wants to challenge, if you will, the authenticity of what I'm saying at this particular point, Mr. Allen will be back with us next week. He handles the actual communication. He likes to work with computers, if you will. I assume that most of you get through if you call. We will certainly respond to anyone that wants to challenge what I'm about to say over the next 20 minutes, if you will. And that is, in additions of my column in the Minnesota Sportsman Recorder, my television program, and the blog radio program that I do with Mr. Allen, I have laid out infinitum the mandate that had to be in place and the documentation that was extremely fundamentally important to authenticating the numbers that I knew would come down. Those reflections have been captured and chronicled, if you will, on these blog radio programs, which can be recaptured on demand, my columns in the Minnesota Spokesman Recorder, my television programs on the Minneapolis Television Network, and et cetera, and my own reflections on my own website. And so I have warned for quite some time that it was quite clear that there was an absence of foundation of integrity and confirmation, and that if that was not corrected, that we would find ourselves, we the African American, the sons and daughters of the African, would find ourselves confronted with information that was totally inconsistent with the facts. People attacked, if you will, and apparently in conversations with my associate, Mr. Allen, Mr. Tuttle indicated that he had basically been told that he could not participate on any program in which I was on the air and was, quote-unquote, in studio. I'm saddened by that. I wasn't going anywhere. That was not going to happen anytime soon. But we knew that he could speak in an arena that had some relationship with the African-American community through the medium that we represent, and that is radio, quote-unquote, be it blog radio or commercial radio, and et cetera. But I wanted to give the benefit of a doubt. I wanted to give every opportunity. And so I encouraged my colleague, Mr. Allen, to encourage Mr. Tittle to at least come on and let's have a meaningful, productive reflection and discussion. Let's take a look at the numbers. Let's take a look at what the legislation said, if you will, to make sure that the information being provided is consistent with what the statutory requirements were. Well, clearly, Mr. Tuttle has been told that that's something he can't do so long as I am one of the inquisitors, if you will. And I'm an inquisitor, I truly am, and do not apologize for. Being an inquisitor is sometimes important in making sure that the facts are drawn out and presented in the sunlight of truth, integrity, if you will. And so once again, this past week, I heard the diversity director for the Sports Facility Authority, which is the official name of the body that does the day-to-day administration and et cetera in the construction of the People Stadium, now called U.S. Bank. And as we said, we began to ask the questions when the Bureau of Census's latest statistics came out indicating a significant drop in the economic and income base of the African-American community. And in fact, I heard a statement made this past Sunday, which troubled me greatly because there's documentation that shows clearly contrary to that, and this also comes from the Census Bureau, and that is that in the zip code area 55411, which is one of the most depressed areas and one of the most violent areas in the state of Minnesota and, unfortunately, in the city of Minneapolis, in North Minneapolis, that there was this significant presence of residents of 55411 who were gainfully employed, if you will, were making significant amounts of dollars and et cetera, in excess of $1.5 million in income and et cetera. And we said, well, that's absolutely outstanding. We know that that can be supported, as we first said in our columns in 2012, 2013, and 2014 in the Spokesman Recorder. We intentionally stepped back, toned it down in 2015 because we knew that what is being discussed right now was about to happen and that there would be research data that would be forthcoming, which would unfortunately expose a serious cancer. That cancer is lying and manipulation, if you will. We heard statements that 250 jobs for African Americans had been negotiated and that those African Americans were on site, if you will. And earlier in this program, we touched on Kevin Lindsay, the commissioner of the Human Rights Department, who said to a gathering of the masses, if you will, in 2011 that 32, he initially said 32. Then after construction began on the Viking Stadium, he kicked it up to 37% of the workforce would be. And depending on who they were talking to and what kind of setting they were in, sometimes they would say people of color, sometimes they would say minorities. 37% of a workforce of 7,500, 1,500 or better a day, according to Mr. Tittle, on a program on an urban contemporary station here this past Sunday in our beloved city of Minneapolis and St. Paul. That's a lot of folks. That's about 2 in 5, if you will. In other words, if you see 5 construction workers, at least 2 of them should be quote-unquote persons of color. The other 3 would be Caucasians, if you will. And, I mean, that's what 37% of 100% would look like if you talked in terms of warm bodies. And so we, again, heard the numbers. There was no identification at any point in time that those numbers were being authenticated, even in studio, as individuals talked, reflected on how good things were, if you will. It is the 55411 declaration that greatly troubles me, particularly in light of the fact that one of the mandates that was put in place by the Minnesota legislature, and one of our own, State Senator Bobby Joe Champion, is one of the co-chairs of a committee of the legislature comprised of members of both the House and the Senate, whose responsibility it is to monitor the implementation of the legislation, if you will. We've talked about it infinitum, both on my television program and my columns and on these programs here, the Ron and Don program. And we said it a year ago that we were troubled by the fact that this committee, this legislative committee, oversight committee, important word in the world of legislation and definitions, legal in nature and et cetera, that there's never been a formal report. Now, the Sports Facility Authority has been identified as making quote-unquote reports, if you will. We have those documents in hand, and periodically on this program, on my television program, and in my columns and et cetera, I touch on it, ask the question, have these numbers been certified? Can they be certified? And here's one of the games that is being played. And I know that the chairman of the Public Safety Committee, which the Minneapolis Civil Rights Department reports to, has been concerned about the authenticity and the accurateness of certain information that is given to the City Council, which indicates how well things are going in the construction of the Viking Stadium. And there is limited reflections in the legislation passed way back in 2012 that talk in terms of what the role of the city of Minneapolis will be. Not the Met Council, if you will, which, interestingly enough, in late 2012, 2013, showed up with, quote-unquote, helping to develop the equity program, the diversity program, which led to the diversity director of the council, the Metropolitan Council, who also was on this urban affairs program 3 weeks ago, to have the contract with her and a young man by the name of Aaron terminated because the Vikings representatives had detected that there was a significant amount of plagiarism, which the Viking organization did not take too kindly to. But we then continued to ask the question when a series of grand announcements were made in a number of publications and et cetera, Star Tribune, the paper that also I'm affiliated with in having a column, our own beloved spokesman recorder and et cetera, that talked in terms of a $750,000 grant from the Sports Facility Authority to a group of individuals, this was 2.5 years ago, who would begin to train individuals to immediately begin work on the Sports Facility Authority. And again, on this program, which, as Mr. Allen and myself always point out, can always be recaptured on demand, if you will, the broadcasting facility that we operate and broadcast under, Blog Radio, has a vast library, if you will, on demand of every program that has been done by all entities that are affiliated with Blog Radio, including this program. And we've always encouraged people to, you know, get the date together that a statement was made, a series of calls were made, people came on the air, and et cetera, and take a look at what was said then and what's happening now. Now, that takes us back to the Legislative Oversight Committee. We have yet to see a report from the Legislative Oversight Committee in which they specifically detail with the documentation and certification. See, the certification, and you got a lot of lawyers that are in the Minnesota legislature, both in the House and the Senate. And so they understand the importance of language, if you will, the importance of authenticating, if you will, the importance of being able to verify, document, and et cetera, when information is disseminated, such as numbers, the actual kind of work that's being done, and the hours. Because this is another situation as we go into the last 9 minutes of tonight's program. A year ago, a little over a year ago, Mr. Lindsay, Mr. Tittle, and the Sports Facility Authority made a rather interesting announcement, and that was that percentages would no longer be used, but it would be hours, the hours worked by the workers. If there were 900 African Americans, as an example, who allegedly worked on the stadium, that their hours would be that which you would measure against 37% participation. And we said, okay. In fact, in two columns in the Minnesota Spokesman Recorder in early 2014, we said we thought that that was a tactical error by the Sports Facility Authority, by the Legislative Oversight Committee, by Mortensen and others to do that, because there was already documentation that clearly showed that they weren't even close to 37% as it pertains to hours worked. Now, the Star Tribune and others have stayed totally away from analyzing the hours. One does not have to be a mathematical genius. One just has to know how to access the information, which is what I do, and I do it well. That the numbers just don't add up. That it sounds great when one is in front of a microphone and is not being challenged and is going uncontested. Now, I know that a person out there could say, well, that's the same situation with you, Mr. Edwards. You're sitting there, you're running your mouth, no one is there to challenge you, and et cetera. But our phone lines, 20 out of 22 times in a year, are open. The phone lines are open. Give us a call. You know, we will talk about it. We will go over the numbers. We will talk in terms of who it is that has advanced the numbers. In fact, in some regards, we're just like the U.S. Bureau of Census, who came up with that information about how startling the collapse of the economic base of African Americans in Minnesota had taken place, if you will. And so tonight, as we watch a community struggle, as we watch continued violence in our community, as we watch young men and women lose their lives either by gunfire or knives or beatings and et cetera, we wonder how the conditions and the safety of our community could have improved if, in fact, we were the real recipients, notice the word, if we were the real recipients of all of the information and all of the rewards and goodies that we're always told is coming into our community. Now, it takes me back to 55411, because in the legislation is specific language that talks in terms that specific zip code area 55411, would receive special dispensation and consideration because of the economic hardships. And there were a couple of areas in Minnesota, and one of them specifically was one of the Native American reservations in northern Minnesota, there in White Earth, if you will. And we began a monitoring process, if you will, I and my associates, and concentrated primarily our research entities are on the West Coast. And it is amazing the kind of information that one can extract when one appears to be extracting that information from another part of the country. And so tonight I appeal to the chair of the Sports Facility Authority, the two co-chairs of the legislative committee, one from the House of Representatives, one from the Senate. Particularly I appeal to our state senator, one of two African-American state senators, two of three legislators, if you will, the other one being an African-American woman from St. Paul in the House of Representatives. So it's not like we have a lot of large caucuses, if you know what I mean. But I appeal to the senator from North Minneapolis to, and this will be the third time we've done this, which is not been responded to, and we understand why, but we appeal again that there be a public forum, if you will, and they bring in the charts and et cetera, if you will, and they bring in the state demographer. Yes, 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 the state demographer. And do as was done at a hearing about, oh, my God, 5 years ago, 6 years ago, when the current president of the NAACP of Minneapolis was the chair of the advisory committee to the United States Civil Rights Commission. A lot of people didn't know that Ms. Levy Pounds was the chairwoman. In fact, I think her term was just up this past July. You just can't get any information now about the advisory committee here in Minnesota. But they had an interesting public hearing. In fact, it went on all day long. It went on, started at 9 in the morning and went until about 4:20 that particular day. A lot of people testified. In fact, the chief operation officer for Thor Construction was one of those that gave testimony. We have referenced it periodically over the last couple of years because he was quite perturbed, and rightly so, with what was happening to African-American contractors and business people, and put it on the federal record. The only problem is that the federal record, the testimony given that day by a lot of people, including the Minnesota state demographer, never got published, never happened. I don't know if Kevin Pounds did not have the time or et cetera. But anyways, as we conclude tonight, as I said before, next week, phone lines will be open every opportunity. In fact, we'd like to hear from the director of the Minneapolis Civil Rights Department who has been providing information through Hire Minnesota at a time when no personnel connected with the Minneapolis Civil Rights Department has ever gone on site and taken a look at the composition of the workforce. So we appreciate the opportunity to be with you this evening. We will be returning next week. As I said before, phone lines will be open. We look forward to hearing from you, and we invite Mr. Tuttle to join us and to talk a little bit about the success of the African-American community on, quote-unquote, the People's Stadium, now known as the U.S. Bank. Again, I'm Ron Edwards. This is the Don and Ron program. Good evening.